and talked about how the teacher said that basically Christopher Columbus was a terrorist. And Tony lost it and said, she can't say that. Christopher Columbus was a great man. He discovered America, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
Okay. So that book in itself, and I don't know if it's been on the ban list, but a lot of white folks have had issues with Howard Zinn's book.
Intriguing. Well, we're definitely going to get into that.
Yeah.
So this is what brought us to this conversation, Code Keepers. I was reading the Black Wall Street Times, and it's an online publication. Comes out of, I don't know, I can't remember where it comes out of, someplace down south. And this article, teacher resigns after district employee removes black heroes on wall. I thought that was intriguing. And so I wanted to find out who was the teacher that resigned. So this teacher resigned when another female teacher took down pictures of, let's see, of black heroes, American black heroes. The depictions included MLK, Harriet Tubman, Colin Powell, George Washington Carver. So he sent a letter to the governor. I got a letter from the governor the other day. Yeah, back on my PE stuff. And he resigned from his teaching position as an exceptional student education teacher at the O.J. Sims Elementary School. And he, let me go back to him, this gentleman. Doesn't this look like a mugshot? I don't know. It looks like a mugshot. He's definitely unhappy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he chose the theme because the majority of the students and the residents in that neighborhood that surround that school are black. And as an ally, he wanted to motivate his students with inspirational leaders that they could easily look up to and see themselves. I thought that was kind of interesting. But the interesting thing is, just bottom piece, the GOP CRT continues its assault on education. And that brings us to tonight's conversation. In a similar article on that same website, I found that there was an article that all the Code Keepers need to check into. I had to share it with Minister Zumbi. That's going to be the topic of tonight's topic. That's going to be the topic of tonight's discussion. All right. Mm-hmm. So look, Code Keepers, we need to take a real sharp look at what's happening with the educational system. We really need to take a sharp look at what happens to the educational system. And that's why we're talking about getting on code. So let's get on code. All right. Welcome to Get on Code, the Fly Guy Show, which is a series of melanated conversations focused on empowerment, health, wealth, and knowledge of self.
People think in binary choices because they are conditioned to.
And on the wall was a picture of a wolf and a lion. I think the wolf was the Democratic Party, the lion was the Republicans.
But the drug trade and all these illegal stuff that people do, that's still economics. It's just that they couldn't do it in a traditional system.
We're talking about melanated wealth.
So we can build wealth, but we just, for some reason, don't seem to be able to transfer it.
You had a great experience. Fine, that means nothing.
What were you told as a child about education? You had to be how many times better?
Every impression without an expression becomes depression.
All right, so we're back to another great episode of Get on Code. And tonight, white lies to protect. I'm having a hard time talking. White lies to protect white children. Oklahoma's public school, Ryan Walters. And let me show you Ryan Walters, all right? This is Ryan Walters. Now, who is Ryan Walters? Let's find out. All right. So, well, let me start with this, and then I can't wait to get your feedback on it. Mm-hmm. So this video, And I think it was him teaching to his AP history class, right? When he was a teacher. On the film, the former appointed Oklahoma Secretary of Education, he actually ran a race and he won the position. So now he's the Oklahoma Superintendent of Public Instruction. All right, so he incorrectly cites Black history figures and studies multiple times. Like, for instance, he says that Malcolm X is the founder of the Black Panther Party. All right, let's see what else he's, because he says some really crazy stuff, right? He says some other crazy stuff. And to be honest with you, I think I see where this is going. This is going kind of Florida. This is going quite Florida. All right. So here he is, Ryan Walters. And let's go to his quote. I can't wait to get your response on this, Zumbi. Malcolm X believed that you needed to force change now, that waiting is only making it worse, that you've got to be, if they're going to be violent to you, you be violent to them. That is, if they're going to be scared to do things, to change things for African Americans, because they're scared of that racists will be like, push back and get mad. Well, you need to get madder. And so he started the Black Panthers, which started pushing a violent response to government oppression. Zobie. What are your thoughts on this, good brother?
Well, in Malcolm's own words, he always said only a fool would allow his enemy to educate his children. Okay. So we should not be surprised by this. Also, you know, I had a chance to read an article earlier this evening, and what I've come across as a thing is, I kind of look at it as what I call the fear of a Black planet syndrome. Okay. And we were talking about this in the green room, where if people knew the true history of America, how America was really built, okay, there will be people who will be looking for some form of retribution. I'll give you a case in point. The late Howard Zinn wrote a book called A People's History of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in that book, he basically didn't go along with the script of Christopher Columbus discovering America. He basically labeled him as a gangster, a guerrilla pimp, and a terrorist.
A gangster, a guerrilla pimp, and a terrorist.
Yes.
As if being a gangster wasn't hard enough. Okay. All right.
Okay. And for those of you who may be fans of the HBO series of Sopranos, there's an episode where Tony's son comes home and talks about what he learned in school. And he actually introduced the book to Tony Soprano, People's History of the United States of America. And he said to Tony, this is what we learned in class, that Christopher Columbus was not this great individual, that he was basically, and I'm just using the phrase, of a gangster, a guerrilla pimp, and a terrorist. Tony Soprano, being Italian, lost it. He says, they can't say that. Christopher Columbus was a great man. He discovered America. So giving you the typical party line of who Christopher Columbus was. But in that clip, what you learn is this. Whoever controls the past, or whoever controls the narrative of the past, can control the present and ultimately the future.
True that.
Okay. So if I were to go back and do some revisionist history, and let's say we whitewash certain individuals in history, okay? Now you can begin to tell a narrative that is favorable to you. It's the old African proverb, okay? Until lions have historians, the hunter will always be the hero. Because when you look at history, who always tells the story? It's the conqueror, not the conquered. We never get to hear the side of the conquered.
Now that's intriguing. That's intriguing. Good Brother Emmanuel Brick says, this is what happens when your enemies educate your children, which harkens back to something that you just said, Minister Zumbi. Now, I want to bring out a little more of what Ryan Walters said. So let me back up just a little bit for those co-keepers who are just popping on. Ryan Walters stated that Malcolm X started the Black Panther Party for self-defense, which started pushing a violent response to government oppression. Now Zumbi, what did the Black Panther Party for self-defense do violently?
You know, it well, let's clean this up, okay?
Okay.
I was watching an interview with Bobby Seale, co-founder of the Black Panther Party. All right. Bobby Seale himself, and this comes straight out of his mouth, he says, had Malcolm not been assassinated in the Audubon Ballroom in February of 65, the Black Panther Party would not have been founded in Oakland in October of 66. Okay. What Bobby Seale and other Panthers did say was that they felt that they were the ideological children of Malcolm in terms of adopting his gospel of Black nationalism from the lecture, The Ballad or the Bullet. All right. So we always have to look at timelines. So how does a dead man found an organization when you have a 16-month gap? See, this is where we have to start thinking and we have to start using timelines. Number one, when you talk about violence, who's defining what violence is? If I'm an oppressed person and I use force to get you off me, to the oppressed, it's self-defense, but to the oppressor, it's violence because you're supposed to suffer and suffer peacefully. All right. So when we talk about the Black Panther Party for self-defense, they says, look, we will never be the aggressor, but we reserve the human right to defend our physical welfare and integrity, which is what the Panthers have always been about, on top of doing for self in terms of being able to provide the basic human needs of food, clothing, shelter, affordable medical care. You know, this is what the Panthers were about. And what they don't tell you in history is that the same programs that the Panthers created, once they destroyed the Panthers, they co-opted them.
Absolutely. The free lunch program is one example.
You know,
the interestingly free enough, yeah, the free clinic. The free clinic is a second.
Right.
And a lot of the legislation that rallied around gun ownership and the ability to bear arms, not bear arms, but display the fact that you have a gun.
Right.
Was based upon some of the actions. And let me say this, the peaceful actions of the Black Panther Party for self-defense. Because, look, did the Black Panther Party ever go after any police officers?
No, they didn't.
I mean, there may have been one or two off, you know, members who may have done some crazy stuff, but the organization itself didn't target the government. It simply said, if we have the right to bear arms and there are people who will harm us, we should protect ourselves.
And that's the stand your ground law.
That is the stand your ground law.
Right. And that's really all the Panthers were about. Now, when you go further and you start talking about BLA, the Black Liberation Army, which was an offshoot of the Panthers, they may be slightly different than what the Panthers were about.
Okay? Slightly.
Right. So that's why I said, you know, when you deal in history, and this is the reason why, as POWs, we were never allowed to read, because what is the worst disease you can give to an enslaved people?
Education.
Well, right. Let's, okay.
All right. What were you about to say, bro?
The worst disease you can give to an enslaved people is a taste of freedom. You get a taste of freedom, they'll never go back into that enslaved state of mind. It's like you basically have to put their lights out.
Okay. Hey, Code Keepers, on the screen we have Ryan Walters. All right. So Ryan Walters is the Oklahoma State Superintendent. All right. Yes, he's the Oklahoma State Superintendent. Mm-hmm. All right. During a vote on the accreditation status for Tulsa Public Schools. All right, that's what I was getting at. All right, and I lost this earlier. So this is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm. This is the area of the most notable Black Wall Street. Now, there were Black Wall Streets all through our nation. Mm. But the most notable, when we think of Black Wall Street, we're thinking about the one in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Right. So this is ground zero, mm-hmm, in terms of the culture war, right?
Right.
Let me show you something else. He talked about the Dahl test. And we know about the Dahl test, right? So the Dahl test, yes, that Kenneth and Mamie Clark did, they put together a test where they had, you know, melanated children play with dolls. And then they would ask them questions. You know, this doll is white. This doll is Black, right? Mm. Which one, yep, is the prettier doll? Mm. Which one is the nicer doll? Mm. Which one is the more respectable doll? Which one is the smarter doll?
Right.
And during that particular administration of the doll test, most of our children were picking the white doll as the favorite doll, everything, mm-hmm, favorite, you know,
right,
smarter, prettier, mm-hmm, more intelligent, you know, more respectful.
Right.
All right. So he says what the psychologist said was because we segregated them for so long and we put all the Black students in the bad school and the white students in the good school, these young Black kids are going, well, I guess white's better, Ryan Walters explains to his students. All right, so now this guy is now in charge to some degree, you know, has a very high leadership position in Tulsa, Oklahoma's administration, school administration. All right, so it looks like he did an enslavement tweet. You know, it looks like there's a whole lot of craziness that he's involved in. But the point that I want to bring out, and this is the point I really can't wait to get your thoughts on, Minister Zumbi. So let me go back to Ryan. All right, we're putting the heat on Ryan. Why is he going out of his way as a teacher? You know, this was before his current position, to teach this. Hmm. Well, I have a theory, and okay, this is my theory. Now count these words. We must secure the existence of our people and is a word, a future for white children. How many words was that? There were 14 words. Mm. And so this concept of the 14 words is a slogan that David Lane created. It has ties to Hitler. You know, it's actually David Lane, if I remember correctly. He was summarizing something that Hitler said, so, and it's become the most popular white supremacist slogan in the world. So whenever you see, you know, the good old boys and girls and thems who have a 14 or they rock a 14, you can just Google and you're going to find images with people with tattoos that say 14 words, or it's just the number 14, or 14 and the shield, or 14 and the number one is actually a gun pointing up, like a rifle pointing up. And then the four of 14 is a pistol pointing down. So you're going to, and sometimes you'll just see a rifle pointing up and a pistol pointing down. The 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's what Ryan Walters is intentionally or accidentally doing. Now, I don't know him, so I'm going to say intentionally or accidentally, but that's what he's promoting and pushing, the 14 words. And the reason that the 14 words are important is because there's another concept that white supremacists hold very tightly to. And that concept is the great replacement. So we've talked about the great replacement before. This is another example of the great replacement. If we can replace, the great replacement theory is saying that Jews and melanated people are replacing true Americans, and we must do everything we can to prevent them from being empowered and to make them want to leave. That's the great replacement in a nutshell. Yeah, I'm not going to go into it real deep, but the 14 letter and the great replacement is wrapped up in my position, and I might be wrong, in what I see happening here with Ryan Walters. Your thoughts?
It goes back to what I talk about with the fear of a black planet syndrome. And I want to give you some context as to what I mean about this. The Pew Research Center has already said that what we know as the white race is already in a negative birth rate. In other words, for every one white person who dies, there are six who will never be born. That's number one. Okay. Number two, the Pew Research Center has already said that the fastest growing religion is Islam, which before the year 2050 will overtake Christianity as the most dominant religion on earth. And within Islam, you have the fastest growing demographic are Spanish speaking people. We're talking Puerto Rican, Cuban, Mexican, El Salvadorian, etc. Okay. On top of that, you also have a shift in power. Okay. When Gaddafi took over the African Union, people don't realize that Gaddafi had the economic power to put out the economic lights of Western colonialists.
Oh, that's intriguing.
Okay.
To the
point where what he was trying to do was to talk to other leaders in the African Union, along with his brothers in OPEC, to get off the US dollar and to get on a currency that will be backed by gold. Okay, so now we've got dark-skinned faces controlling resources and gaining power to get their white colonialists off their back. But think about that. Okay.
So now we're mixing appropriately the fear of the black planet, as so eloquently stated by a Public Enemy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I said I got a letter from the government the other day, I opened and read it and said they were suckers. That quote is from one of the opening songs of Fear of a Black Planet.
Well, no, that was in Nation of Millions.
That okay. was in Nation of Millions?
That was in okay. Nation of Millions.
So I've done too many Public Enemy mixtapes, so it's all mixed up in my okay. head.
So but, when we get into Fear of a Black Planet, that's where Welcome to the Terror Dome was introduced.
Oh, okay. Good time in hip hop. Good time in hip hop. So hey, salute to hip hop, 50 years. Right. So we're looking appropriately at Fear of a Black Planet, mm-hmm. The Great Replacement.
Right.
And the 14 words. And yeah. This is what I believe. When we take those three things, right? Mm. When we take those three things, and you thought it was Black Planet too. It wasn't just me. Thank you, Emmanuel. Love you, bro. Okay. When you take those three things, that explains why there is such a push for CRT to be an issue. And for places like Florida, where they're removing aspects of quote unquote Black history. And oh, let me say this because it's on my mind right now. Mm. I matter of fact, I need to do full face on this one. Black history is not American history. Let me say it again. Black history is not American history. Now, African American history is a part of American history, truthfully, but Black history is global. So we should never reduce ourselves to our beloved country and the time period that our beloved country has been our beloved country, right? So Black history is in Cuba. Black history is in Mexico. You know, the second president of Mexico was a Black man. I can't think of his name right now. I just talked to my students about it. But if you Google the second president of Mexico, you'll find out his name. His father was an African.
Okay. Are we talking about Emilio Zapata?
No.
Okay.
No. I just want to make sure. It's not Emilio Zapata. It's not Ganga. It's not Yanga or Ganga. But his last name was Guerra, or I can't think of his name right now. Okay. But the second president of Mexico. So you'll find Black history in the Philippines. You'll find Black history in Africa. You'll find Black history in Ireland. You know, so we're global, so we need to stop saying that. Back to my point. I think Emmanuel's going to disagree with me. When we put those three things together, Fear of a Black Planet, you know, the 14 words, Great Replacement. That's one of the things that's really driving the pushback to change history as it's taught. And there's this, you know, we don't want to upset white children. Huh? Okay, so.
You know, and see, one of the things that Dr. Amos Wilson talked about in terms of the, what is the primary objective of education? Okay. He said the primary objective of education is to ensure the biological survival of a people. And what he also argued was this, and he felt that this is what was the failure of, you know, Brown versus Board of Education. Okay. You can't give everybody the same education. Why? Everybody is coming from a different reality and a different stimulus. Okay. So if everybody got the same education based on this incubator that we're in called America, for African people, all we would be doing is to help participate in our own oppression. So this is why Dr. Wilson was always pushing for an African-centered education based on what our reality was and based on what our needs are. Okay, when you look at European people or white people, what does their education focus on? Conserving what they have already taken from African and indigenous peoples around the world. When you talk to erroneously called third world peoples, their education is to be revolutionary and to get this gorilla off their back.
Oh yeah, you know, education is to obtain and maintain power. And speaking of obtaining and maintaining power, this is thank you, Emmanuel. Emmanuel is always coming through, man. Vicente Ramon Guerrero. All right. Okay, so he was the second president of Mexico, right? And under his administration, the enslavement of African people finally came to an end. Now, it had come to a stoppage prior to his administration. Mm. But his administration closed that thing. It shut everything down. So, his father was, I'm not sure if his father was a previously enslaved African or if his father is one of the Africans that's traveled to Mexico or some of the indigenous people who were African people in Mexico. You know, I don't know that part. His mother was an indigenous person. So, but, you know, he was the first black president of Mexico. Second president of Mexico, while it took us 42 years to get President Obama, Mexico had happened in, you know, the second time around. And the interesting thing is the enslavement of African people in Mexico ended with help of the United States. So at any rate, when we look at what's happening now with, you know, Ron DeSantis or Ron Disney Santos or Ron Demon Santos, you know, however you want to call him, and his administration trying to change black history, there comes a time where we can analyze it. We can, you know, use the historical information and try to figure out why this happened. But we also need to come to some strategy. So why don't we round this conversation out with some strategizing, with some things that people can do in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you know, worldwide, to address these types of things.
Okay. So
I have two ideas. I know you are a plethora of strategy.
Okay. I've always said this. Everything begins in the home. And I think it was Hakeem Adabudi who talked about this in his book, Black Men Single, Obsolete, Dangerous. Convert your home into a miniature institution. In other words, how big is your library? And there was something Dennis Kimbrough said. He said that the size of your library, there's a direct correlation between the size of your library and the size of your television screen. So in other words, the larger your library, the smaller your screen would be, and vice versa. So how many books are on your shelf? How many children's books that deal with African history, African people, is in your book? I mean, is in your library? How many DVDs do you have? How many learning tools do you have? Okay. Your home should be a miniature institution in order to properly educate your children. Now, ideally, we want a situation to where we have more African-centered schools, whether it be the Marcus Garvey School in LA, the Lotus Academy that is in Philadelphia, and other African-centered schools, be they brick and mortar or even create them online. Okay? Online education is a $300 billion plus dollar industry. All right. With the educators that we have, we should be able to master the technology to where we can create schools online as a starting point and be able to teach what is relevant to African children, whether it's economics, whether it's health and fitness, health and wellness, whether it's, you know, multiplication. Okay. So let us use our innovation and let us use our creativity to create what it is that we need as a people. Okay. I'm not in the business of trying to force somebody to get right with God when its rise to power came through the devil. I'm not in that business.
Okay. Zumbi, missed you, bro. Missed you, bro.
Okay. I'm not in that business. And Negroes need to get up out of that business. Okay. There's a point where, you know, as Public Enemy says, get the F out of Dodge.
Ooh, and that was one ready. Of my favorite songs too.
Okay, and be ready to go into the desert to detox from being colonized by Egypt. All right?
All right, yeah. So Emmanuel agrees with you. The teaching of our history must begin in our homes. Okay. Is that your total strategy, brother?
That, like I said, that's a starting point.
Okay.
Okay, it's a starting point. From there, because I think we have to have the courage. It's kind of like this. And I was talking with an elder this morning. The question I always pose to us, what is our bottom line? Do we want liberation or better treatment on a plantation? And that's across the board. And that is in every component of human activity, as Dr. Francis Cresswell said, and Dr. Neely Fuller have laid out. So if we want to be a liberated people, there's freedom dues that we have to pay. And part of paying those freedom dues is creating the institutions necessary to educate the people in what is relevant to our reality so we can improve our condition on this planet. But everything has to have a starting point.
Okay. I get that. Mm-hmm. All right. So let me come in with my position.
All right.
And what I'm showing on the screen is something. Let me make it a little larger. What I'm showing on the screen is something that my community action team did last year. All right. So.
Okay. I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. So we created a report card for the Virginia Beach School Board. So we measured them in these areas: political knowledge, quality, communication, political ethics, community over city balance, political teamwork, leadership, legislation. And as you can see, we looked at Carolyn Rye, Kimberly Melnick, Sharon Felton, Dottie Holtz, Laura Hughes, Carolyn Weems, and we looked at them and said, hey, in this area of political ethics, you know, of political knowledge, quality of work, legislation, leadership, you fell short. You know, there was a possibility for them to have a total, in this case, of 40 points. So a score of 25 points would be considered satisfactory, as you can see here. A score of 25 points is a satisfactory score. Right. But look at the scores we had. 8s, 16, 11, 15, 14. So we're pretty much saying that none of y'all are doing the things that need to happen in our school. And so what I'm postulating is that we do the same thing in Tulsa. So if you, you know, you're a resident of Tulsa and you're on code and you, you know, you're for empowerment, these are the type of strategies, you know, of course, like Emmanuel said, like Minister Zumbi said, you know, the teaching of power and history must begin in our home. Education is, the purpose of education is to empower people and to obtain and maintain power. Obtain and maintain power. That's why millionaire and billionaire send their children to college, so they can maintain and obtain power. This are the types of things that we need to do. All right. So teach at home, but also we need to compel the seated elected officials to bend to our agenda. All right. They need to bend to our agenda because they work for us. And so I would say, if I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and this is my gift to Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're not asking Ryan Walters to step down. We're not going to ask Ryan Walters to vacate his position. We're going to meet with Ryan on a weekly basis and say, these are the things that are not happening under your administration that need to happen, and we're going to give you hell if you don't make these things happen. See, real political power happens like this. I want that change. It has nothing to do with voting. Voting's a part of it. All right. I'm not saying, but real political power. I don't like the way this policy is. Please change it. So we need to meet with Ryan once a week and point out all of his faults and how his faults and his mistakes have negatively impacted our children. Right? Right? So we meet with him once a week for a year. By the end of that year, he's doing our bidding. So we need to take our enemies and turn them into our tools. We need to take our enemies and turn them into our tools. And by doing so, now we're more empowered to change the politics and legislation that impacts us. So if you live in Tulsa, get on code. Get on code. Force Ryan Walters and his administration to start doing some things that really benefit our children. And to start righting the wrongs, all right, just he needs to come out publicly and say, Malcolm X did not start the Black Panther Party. I was wrong. My assessment of the Dahl test was actually factually incorrect. I was wrong. And have him coming out, find all his old videos, have him coming out, apologizing, have him do a nice apology tour, force the issue. And the good thing is that will stop Ryan Walters, and it will also stop the next Ryan Walters. And it'll eventually stop DeSantis. It will eventually stop Christopher Rufo. Now, most people don't know who Christopher Rufo is. Christopher Rufo is a Republican conservative strategist. I should probably say conservative Republican strategist, who came up with the idea that we're going to make CRT an issue. So when I see CRT or hear CRT, I think Christopher Rufo technique. And his technique was, we're going to find a term, we're going to recodify it, we're going to redefine it, we're going to recodify it, and then we're going to fight against the codified, recodified version. So they've done that with CRT. They've done that with the word woke. And they're doing it with all these aspects that really benefit Black, melanated, indigenous, Moorish, you know, pick a word, pick a term, whatever term you rock with. All of those things are harmful to us. So they've used that pretty effectively on CRT. They use that kind of effectively on woke, although the war on woke is a losing battle right now. So Christopher Rufo had the idea that we're just going to change the definition and fight against it. So instead of saying that this is history that we need to look at and understand how it impacted America, we're going to say this hurts white children and we need to remove it. And we're going to call it CRT. So anytime there's some history that might make one of our white brethren upset, they're going to call it CRT, and they're going to get it legislatively removed. Whenever they have something that they consider woke, they're going to legislatively remove it. That's the Christopher Rufo technique. Interestingly enough, Christopher Rufo came out 2 weeks ago and said that we're losing the war on woke. And so they're going to come up with another strategy, another term is going to become the new term of the day. You know, before it was CRT, then it became woke. There's going to be a new term. It might be twerk. I don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be a new phrase, a concept that relates to us that they're going to start battling against. And you're going to see it coming up very soon, particularly because Christopher Rufo says that the Republicans are losing the culture war. And you don't have to believe me. Look his name up, Christopher Rufo. But our move for empowerment is forcing those who've hurt us to publicly be shamed, to be publicly corrected, and to publicly make moves in a way that will benefit our children. That's what I say we do.
Okay. And just for the sake of, for the record, this doesn't begin with Ron DeSantis. For people who live in the New York City area may remember this name, Albert Schenker. Okay.
Ooh, you went back.
Now, Albert Schenker, particularly for people, I want to say Brownsville, Brooklyn, there was a huge push to basically have Black studies injected into the New York City school system. Okay. When you talk about a nation of millions, what Albert Schenker did was he actually created a national organization called the United Federation of Teachers. In part because he made a declaration. He says we cannot have Black studies in the public school system because it will teach Black students how to hate white people. Okay? But you had to create a national organization to stop Black studies from coming into the school system. Okay? So this battle doesn't begin with Rufo or DeSantis or any of these new jack right-wingers. Okay? And really, this isn't a left-wing or a right-wing thing. It's a white-wing thing. Again, it goes back to the fear of a Black planet. When you can control the narrative, now you can control people's thinking. And when you can control people's thinking, you can control their language and ultimately their behavior. Okay, so this is like an intellectual battleground. And you and I are both old enough to remember the intellectual wars that were fought in the 90s. Okay, what's her name? Lefkowitz. Mary Lefkowitz, okay? And what we had to do to her to put a muzzle on her because of what she was paid to do. In fact, I still have her book, Not Out of Africa, where you've got a bust of Socrates with a Malcolm X hat on it, okay? And how she basically had to be publicly humiliated, not only by Dr. Clark, but Arthur Bernal, who wrote the, I think it was a 2 or 3 volume book called Black Athena. Okay, so these wars have been ongoing. It's just that the landscape has changed, but the objective is still the same. You know, it's like that that phrase, the grand chessboard. Okay, and the other thing that we also have to remember is notice the language. Okay, amongst our people, we have never used the word Afrocentrism. It's always been Afrocentricity, as Dr. Malifi Asante taught us. It's white folks who were saying Afrocentrism, okay? And Lefkowitz was the one who was going after Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Dr. Jeffries, and others who were a part of that African-centered cadre, accusing them of teaching what she calls a feel-good self-esteem rhetoric that had no basis of history whatsoever.
Which is the same thing that is happening now with CRT. It's a feel-good move. We want our white children to feel good. Okay. Now, look, we want all children to feel good, right? So when that's not a debate, but it's crazy. It's
right,
crazy.
And the other thing you got to remember is this. I call it a new Jack McCarthyism. Notice how they've tried to package CRT as a Marxist ideology.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to play the video, but I do want the Code Keepers. It is a great video. Dr. John Henry Clark versus Mary Lefkowitz.
Okay.
This happened in the 80s, right?
It was like mid 90s.
Mid 90s. Okay. Yeah, you're right. It was the mid 90s. Code Keepers, if you haven't checked that out, Real Black One has that video. I'm not going to play it because YouTube is messing with us right now.
Okay.
It is what it is. Let's bring this baby to a close, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've given the strategy that the teaching of our history must begin in our homes. Mm-hmm. I've given the strategy that we should take, you know, Ryan Walters and, you know, turn him into our little BI, and to work for us. So I'm not saying that one strategy is better. They actually work hand in hand. Mm-hmm. But we must do something to ensure a future for our children. Because I tell you what, the white supremacists, they have their 14 words. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I'm not really mad at that. So I have to secure an existence and a future for my two children. I have to secure the existence and a future for my family, my mother's side of the family, my father's side of the family. I have to secure an existence and a future for the children that I teach. Now, I'm not going to harm people in the way that white supremacists will towards that end. But on the surface, I'm not really upset with this. And it gives me a better understanding of why there's such a pushback against Black history. So we got to do something for our kids, y'all. That's my thought. Those are my last thoughts. My last words. We got to do something for our kids. White supremacists are trying to do something for their future. What are your last words, good brother?
The last words is, you know, which do you want? And I said this before in the show. Do you want liberation or do you want better treatment on the plantation? Okay. And there's really no middle ground in that. Because if you say that you want liberation, real liberation, there's some freedom dues that you're going to have to pay. And part of those freedom dues is to begin to create those institutions and those industries that will serve the highest and greatest good of the African world community. One of the quotes that I put, and I'm putting this in the expanded version of my book, is this: don't just teach a man how to fish. Teach the man how to build, manage, maintain, and protect a fishing industry that will feed future generations. Okay. And that's my bit.
You know what? I kind of want to end this in a really intriguing way. All right. So let me end it like this.
I read a New York Times piece on a 100-year-old survivor of the Tulsa massacre. And my question was this: what's the Tulsa massacre? How is it that it wasn't until 2 years ago that I heard about the Tulsa massacre? How is that possible? I've heard about Custer's Little Bighorn. I heard about the Alamo. I heard about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. You know, I heard about all kinds of disasters in which people died. But I had never heard about this thing that happened in 1921, only 3 years before my dad was born. One of the most successful Black communities in America, Black Wall Street, in which everybody was not only burned out of their homes and their businesses, but then driven out of the city limits by an angry mob of, I'm sorry, white people. How is it that this was not taught to me? Because I tell you, at the age of 10, when I was in fifth grade, living in Oakland, California, that would have been a moment of enlightenment for me. And it made me mad. It made me mad that somebody had somehow made an editorial process of what was appropriate for us to learn about our own American history. It made me angry. And it took me 54 years in order to find this out. It's not right. It's not right. And it's doing a disservice to all of America.
Yes. Yes. So the reason that I end with that is because of, and I smack myself on the hand for it as well, because of some of our silence about our information. Some of our, you know, white brethren and sistren who actually could act as family were unable to act as family. And when I first got involved with Conscious Thought, you know, if you didn't say the right words, we didn't have a conversation about Black consciousness. You know, if I brought up the name Malifi Asante or Dr. John Henry Clark or, you know, Conscious Rasta or Dr. Ben, and you said who? Then, you know, there were certain conversations we didn't have. And we definitely didn't talk this talk around quote unquote white folk. You know, we didn't do that. You know, I was taught by my parents not to do that because it would prevent me from opportunities. You know, and that might be true. But it also prevented some of our white fams who would say, hey, this stuff is wrong and it needs to be fixed, from having the opportunity from saying, hey, this stuff is wrong and it needs to be fixed. Hey, Katrina, love you, Queen. Love you. I find the only thing that causes change with them folks is the reduction of funding. Okay, I say that. I say that. Agreed. So I just wanted to end with that thought, that the more that we talk about this, the more we're opening up eyes, not just for us, but for everybody involved. And we need to do that because everybody involved is involved and impacted. And this is not no kumbaya stuff. I am not talking no kumbaya stuff. You know,
this is not the get along game where everybody, we're all going to go. We not playing that kumbaya game where everybody gets a trophy. No, 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 no.
Yeah, this is not kumbaya. I'm saying that, like Tom Hanks, the actor Tom Hanks just stated, if he would have known, he may have done something different. So we got to keep talking so people do something different. Oh, I said that was my last thought, and then you talked. Give your last thought, then I come back. All right. Any last thoughts from you, bro, as we close this out?
You know, and I want to add this to the record. If anybody wants to go into a further study, there's a book I recommend called The Negro in Our History, which was co-written by Carter G. Woodson and Dr. Charles Wesley. What you'll find in that book is the foundations that played a role in shaping the curriculum, not only of the HBCUs, but the Black high schools throughout the South, the middle schools, and the elementary schools. Okay. So you can have a greater historical context of how we got to this point. You can begin to see the foundations that played a role, whether it was the Rockefeller, whether it was the Ford, the Carnegie, the Spelman, the Rosenwald foundations. In fact, you know, one of the questions I ask is Spelman College, who was it named for? Rockefeller's wife. Spelman was her maiden name. Okay. Right. So what we need to do is to have a better understanding of how we got here, the people behind the curriculum, not John Dewey, but the people who were in this book, as well as the money that was put behind shaping the curriculums, paying the teachers, and then creating the type of individuals necessary to maintain their empire.
I say that. All right, so cool. Hey, you've been watching the Get On Code show. We got Minister Zumbi Shawala, author of the great book, GOAT, the Gospel of Afronomics Theology. I normally have my copy around here somewhere, and I think I left it in my other room. Push that book, baby. Push that book. So, and speaking of pushing, go ahead.
Yeah, so basically this book is what I call Rich Dad, Poor Dad meets Malcolm X's Gospel of Black Nationalism. It's got about 22 years of personal experience in business and research in forming what I call our own economic philosophy, which really is going to be in four parts. This book is really the first phase, because before we start getting into skill sets in business and in economics, there needs to be a philosophy. And it was something that Malcolm said in Ballad of the Bullet. Before we have a self-help program, we need a self-help philosophy. So we need to have an African-centered economic philosophy or what we would call a Black economic liberation theology first. Because by doing that, now it gives you a reason to use those skill sets for the benefit of your people. If I give you resources where you have no cultural and spiritual foundation, you, like Thomas Sankara taught, could be a potential enemy of the state.
Wow. So get on code, share the code, teach the code, become the code. Our code is empowerment. And once we finish with Ryan Walters, after we have him do our bidding, right? What do we do with him? Paradiso. Peace, y'all.